Good morning. Today's daf in Shkalim, daf Gimel. Continuing from yesterday's Mishnah, the Mishnah pointed to two dates on the calendar in Adar, which have significance. The first day of Adar and the 15th day of Adar. First day of Adar is Mashpim al Shkalim. We're going to be starting announcing to everyone to go ahead and start sending their machzis to shekel to the base of Mikdash. And that is going to be the collection for the operating budget of the Beis HaMikdash for the entire year. The fiscal year of the Beis HaMikdash begins on the Rosh Chodesh Nisan. As we discussed, that means all Karbanos Sibur, all public Karbanos have to be purchased with the new Shkalim that come in. And so therefore, in 1 month of anticipation, so an announcement is made. Also, Kalayim, as the growth is just growing in at that point in time, so an announcement is made to make sure that nobody has Kalayim growing in there. In their fields. On the 15th day of Adar, as the Mishnah pointed out yesterday, so a number of things occur on the 15th of Adar. The Mishnah mentions incidentally that the walled cities are reading the Megillah on the 15th day of Adar, but the main point of the Mishnah over here in Shkalim is that that's when you're basically going to look at infrastructure. All the roads, all the mikvahs are going to be fixed. You're going to be doing Sarche Rabim, which we're about to define in just a moment what that means. And the Mishnah also says that the graves are going to get marked off. And you're going to go out once again in order to make sure that that there's no climb growing out in the field. Okay, that's the mission that we saw yesterday, and now picking it up right where we left off yesterday, the very top of Gimel Amud Aleph. The Gemara now is going to be commenting. So we're going to fix the mikvahs in any streets that need repairing. So this is the perfect time to do so. And as we pointed out yesterday, the Tiklin Chadatin gives a couple of explanations of why we're doing it at this point in time, but the one of the explanations that he gives is because it's about to be Aliyah L'Rego. People are going to need the roads in order to do the mitzvah of Aliyah L'Rego. So now is a really good time to take care of it. So the Gemara goes on to say, Vosin kol tzarchei rabim, elu ein tzarchei rabim. So the Gemara now is going to be quoting, it seems to be that we're quoting a Mishnah. This Mishnah is from Moed Katan. So so these are activities which are considered public activities, Sarchi Rabim. And as a result of that, they can be done even in Chol HaMoed. And judging cases, capital cases, monetary cases, capital cases, cases that involve Malkus, Upod and Erchim Vecharam and Vagdeshos, and different types of redemptions that can be done, which obviously need appraisal, and all these different types of redemptions can be done and on a different occasion. I'll explain the differences between all these different types of redemptions. Umashkin is a sota. Also, if a sota needs to drink from the mei sota, that can be done also. Vesorfin is a para, burning of the para aduma. It's not like that's happening all that often. Only 10 of them historically. Vorfin egla rufa. On top of that, if we have to go through the process, the procedure of the Egla Rufa, that can be done also. On Chol HaMoed, Verotzin Eved Ivri. Eved Ivri decides that he wants to stay with his master. So the process of piercing his ear. Umetarnas HaMetzorah, Antaras HaMetzorah, Umefarkin, Esaminama Al-Gabe HaMayim. Couple questions of what the correct girsa of the Gemara is over here. But we're going to work with the girsa of removing the lock from the well over the course of the winter. So they had these wells, like cisterns, and the opening was locked up. And the reason why the opening was locked up is because the water needs to be collected over the course of the winter, so that in the summertime there are going to be water accesses. So the locks are unlocked during Chol HaMoed ve'ein machzirin oso, and you don't put it back. Meaning once you unlock it, you don't put it back. Okay. So these are all different examples of things which fall under the category of Tzarchei Rabim. The Mishnah, as we just quoted it, was discussing in the context of doing it during Chol HaMoed. During Chol HaMoed, so you're allowed to do things which are Tzarchei Rabim related. So the Gemara is just using that Mishnah just to give us examples of what exactly are Tzarchei Rabim. Taninan. We're quoting another Mishnah over there in Moed Katan. And that is Mashkin Beis HaShlachim and Steinus HaKvaros. That on Chol HaMoed, what one is allowed to do is one is allowed to irrigate a field, and Mitzayin al HaKvaros, and one is allowed to mark off the graves. So to which the Gemara now says, Lo kfar tzainu me'adar. Now the Gemara says, now that's a little bit difficult to understand. Because obviously when we're talking about Chol HaMoed, so there are two Chol HaMoeds on the calendar. One is Chol HaMoed Sukkot, the other one is Chol HaMoed Pesach. Let's just assume right now that we're talking about Chol HaMoed Pesach. I mean, we could be talking about both, but for the moment, presumably we're talking about Chol HaMoed Pesach. So that's a little bit strange, because remember, 15th day of Adar, we learned first Mishnah Shkalim, yesterday's Daf. So we're marking off the graves on the 15th day of Adar. And then just one short month later, we're going to be marking off the graves again and putting like a limestone to, in order to identify where exactly the graves are. So why are we doing it 1 month later if in fact we did it correctly on the 15th day of Adar? So lo kfar tzino ba'adar, so that's exactly the Gemara's question. The Gemara wants to know, hasn't this been done already? To which tipater, the Gemara says, here's your answer. Again, tipater is a Yerushalmi language that we're going to see a number of times throughout the Yerushalmi, but again, just a small adjustment to get used to the Yerushalmi as opposed to the Bavli. So tipater, so here's the answer you're going to give. And that is sheyarad shetef shel gishamim ushtafa. We're still at the end of the rain season, right? We are at the tail end of the winter. And so it's very possible that it rained and it washed away all the markers, and that's why you have to put down new markers. V'yotzei nafal haklayim, and then also the Mishnah in Mo'ikan says that we're going to go out over klayim. The Gemara says, look, far yafsa me'adar, and again, same basic idea. Our Mishnah in yesterday's daf told us that we're going out over the klayim in the 15th day of Adar, and here we are in Chol HaMoed, and we're doing it again. So the Gemara says, yeah, tipater sha'isa shnasa feila. V'einetz mechim nikarim, it could very well be that it's a late season. The general yield comes out before Nisan. It generally comes out in Adar, but maybe the Mishnah Mo'ikan is talking about where it's a late season, and that's why they are going out once again, Chol HaMoed Nisan, Minayin L'tzion. The Gemara now is going to briefly give us a couple of sources where we have this idea of marking off graves, meaning aside from the fact that's intuitive, And you need to know where the graves are, and the Kohanim are not allowed to go go over a grave. So aside from that, the Gemara now is going to be citing an actual source. Makes it sound like it's a din d'oraisa, not to say formally it's a mitzvah d'oraisa, but certainly that it's a din d'oraisa. Minayin L'tzion. So where do we have this? So Rabbi Brecha, Rabbi Yaakov Bar Yaakov, B'shem Rabbi Hunya Debris Chavin. And Rabbi Yossi Amrla B'shem Rabbi Yaakov Bar Acha B'shem Rabbi Chanunya Debras and Rabbi Chizkia Rabbi Uziel Bereid Rabbi Chunya Debeis Chivrin B'shem Rabbi Chunanya Debeis Chavrin. Okay, so the Gemara here has a lengthy transmission of who said it, various possibilities of where the halacha comes from. Regardless, v'tami tami yikra. So we know that when it comes to the mitzara, so he has to proclaim, he has to announce that he's tami. You have to publicize the matter. And Kadeshi Hei Hatuma Karola Chabathia. So that the Tuma is basically calling out to anyone who's passing by, hey, I'm Tame. Vamar Slo Parosh. And it's basically a warning to people that you don't want to come into contact with me because of my Tuma. And if you come into contact with me, the Tuma's going to get transmitted. So that's the halacha regarding the Mitzora. So the Gemara assumes that it's fair to now just simply take that and apply it over here to a grave in order to mark off where exactly the graves are. Another possible source in terms of where we know that you have to mark off the graves. So Rabbi Elad B'Shem Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachman Vavru Avrim Baretz Vara Etzem Adamu Vano Etzlotzion. So the Gemara quotes a pasuk from Yecheskel. Now the Navi Yecheskel over here is the 39th parak of Yecheskel. So it's talking about the Mechama of Gog u'Magog. It's talking about the death of the widespread death that occurred, the need to be buried. Now, granted, by the way, it does get a little bit tricky as a source because we're talking about the death of non-Jews, and there's a discussion to be had. There's a debate amongst Tanaim in terms of whether or not there is Tumas Ol that comes from a non-Jew. Anyway, this is, you know, we could probably file this under the case of a remez, not an actual source. Anyway, it's a pasuk in Yecheskel. Regardless, despite all that, the Gemara now is going to go over that pasuk in Sefer Yecheskel, and we're going to go over every point. Etzem mikanshem et sinin alav samos. So first of all, we're going to make a tzion, and we're going to make a marker over just bones. So even though the bones in of themselves don't give off tumas ohel, but still you got to mark it off so that people don't come into contact with bones, because there is a transmission of Tumah that comes through Maga. Adam mikanchim etzayin al shajavah gugolus. Let's say you have the majority of the bone structure of the human remains. So that does give off tumas ohel. If you have shajavah gugolus, if you have the skull and the vertebrae, so that's going to give off tumas ohel. Ubana mikanchim etzayin al gabe evan kavua. Now where do you mark? You mark off evan kavua, meaning that we're pouring lime in order to mark it off, right? Sorry for the analogy, but it just works for me. Like in an infield. So you're marking it off. You have to make sure it's Evan Kavua, meaning that the stone is set and not going to be moved. Obviously, if we're talking about a stone that could just easily be picked up and moved, so this marked stone now, if you pick it up and move it, so it no longer serves as a marker. And just the opposite. It's now going to be it's going to be incorrectly signaling that another area is tame. Okay, so you have to make sure that the stone that you're putting the lime on is in fact going to be put on a stone that's set in the ground. Im omer at al gabe evan talusha. The Gemara makes exactly this point. If you're going to do it on a stone that you can move, so afi olechas matame b'makom achir, it's going to go ahead and be matame elsewhere. And then going back to the pasuk in Yecheskel etzlo lamakom tahara. So when putting the marker down, don't put the marker, in other words, don't pour the lime directly over the grave, but rather directly next to the grave, meaning so that if you're standing actually on the marker itself, you're not coming into contact with tumah. And finally, tzion. So mekan tzion. And then the last word in the pasuk in Yecheskel is telling us the actual marker, meaning that's the source for the actual marker itself. The Gemara is going to be quoting a braisa tani. We learned in a braisa, umatza evan achas mitzienas. So alpha pisha in mekaimen kain. So let's say you find a single stone that's marked with lime. So even though you shouldn't do it, meaning that the lime should create some sort of perimeter. So nevertheless, hama'ahil, if let's say you find yourself directly over that marker, so hama'ahil tameh, so you're going to become tameh. Meaning the assumption is that if the marker is not creating a perimeter, but rather there's just a simple line marker in of itself, so you have to assume that the source of tumah is directly underneath it. So by you stepping on it, so now you're coming into contact with tumah. So ani omer, mis haya, again, just a question of gears over here. But anyway, the basic idea is what we just expressed, that the mace is directly underneath it. Hayushtein, now let's say there was two stones that were marked with lime and an area in between. So you now have a perimeter. So amal aleim tawar v'neim tameh. So now what you're going to assume that it was marked correctly, which means that they are marking now that anything between the lime marks are going to become tameh. But if you were to step directly on the lime, so you're going to be tahor. And imaya chorish means time. Now, if there was a plowed field between them, sarei and kiyachidio, so then we're going to assume that they are not marking off an area in between, and therefore beneim tahor and al gabeim tameh. So now that means that the area between them is going to be tahor, and we have to assume that these are two separate, independent markers. And by stepping on either one of them, you're going to become tummy. Tani, the Gemara quotes another braisa. Emitzayin and alabasar. Shemen is akel abasar. So let's say it's human remains, but it happens to be human flesh, and only human flesh, meaning there's no markers. I'm sorry, there's no bones over there. So the braisa over here says, oddly enough, but the Gemara is going to explain it, that we don't mark off the decomposed flesh. Now, why? So the braisa says shemen is akel habasar, because what's going to happen is that the flesh is going to decompose, and it's not going to last. Meaning, if there are bones as part of the human remains, so that's not going to decompose anytime soon. But if it's just flesh and flesh alone, so that's going to decompose really quickly. And the Gemara says, and so what? So the Gemara goes on to explain this a little bit better. Rabbi Yustabar. So the Gemara says, now I'm a little bit confused, because what's going to end up happening is that if we don't mark off the flesh, so before decomposition, isn't it going to be metame? And the Gemara says, so I don't understand. So the Gemara says, Amarlei, Mutav she's kalkulabo shlisha'a, va'al yis kalkulabo la'olam. So the Gemara says over here, we're weighing the following. Look, if we were to mark it off, so presumably the markings will last for a very long time. Although we just entertained that sometimes it needs a refreshing after just 1 month. But be that as it may, it's gonna last for a very long time. The decomposition of flesh is gonna occur really quickly. And so what the Gemara here is saying is that, look, we're basically playing the long game over here as opposed to the short game. Meaning overall, decomposition is going to occur really quickly. Yes, there's going to be a short period of time where it's going to be tameh. And yes, if somebody walks over it during that period of time, he's going to become tameh. But if we were to mark it, so then the decomposition is going to occur really quickly. The marking is going to be there for a long time. Anyone who goes over there with any truma, so they're going to feel the need to burn the truma, understandably. So I'd rather take the short-term risk, but arrive at the long-term gain. We're up to the next Mishnah. In the Yushami, the Mishnayos are described as halachas, halacha base. So the next Mishnah begins, Amar Rabbi Yehuda Brishona, you okrim, umashlichim lefneim. Now let's say, shluchei based and found kalim in somebody's property. So what Rabbi Yehuda described is that basically we are looking at a progression in terms of what the shluchei basin did, and realized that it was a bit of a mistake, and so they changed their position a couple of times. The Mishnah goes on to explain. So birishona you okrin umashlichim lefneim. So the shluchei basin, if they found kalim in somebody's field, so they would rip the kalim out and they would throw it in front of the owner. Misharabu over evera. However, they found that this didn't. This wasn't punitive enough, and many people just allowed klaim to go out in their field. So hayu okrin umashlichim ledrachim. So the next thing they would do is they would throw it out into the road. They would take the klaim and throw it out into the road. Itkinishu yuhu mafkirin eskol asada. And then afterwards, they declared the owner's field to no longer belong to him. In other words, they declared it ownerless. And as we're going to learn in just a moment, as we've gone through a number of times throughout Chas, Basin has that right, has that ability to disavow a person of his property. Okay, so Tani, the Gemara over here immediately quotes the Braisa, which is going to give us a little bit better description of what we just saw together in our Mishnah. I'm Rav Yehuda B'shona, you okun ha-mashlichim lefneihem. If kalim were found in a person's field, so the Shluchei Basin would go ahead, rip it up, and put it in front of the person's house. Now, the owner of said home, so he's happy. Not only did he say one thank you, he actually gave two thank yous to the Shluchei Beisdin. So number one, so thank you so much for weeding my field. And number two, and then on top of that, the climb that was put in their field served as animal fodder. So thank you very much, and thank you very much. So Misharabu over Avera, now we understand. So now, this only encouraged people to leave klaim out in the field because they know the shluchei basim now are going to basically weed it out and give it back to them and they're going to use it for fodder. So hayu mashlichen al hadrachin. So they figured, okay, we need to reassess. We have to make this more punitive. So what they did is they took the klaim and they threw it out into the road. Afal pikein hayu smeichin shayu menachshin sedoseim iskinu shiyu mafkirin kol asadikula. So here as well, people were generally speaking very happy. Because the fields now were still weeded, even though they didn't benefit from using it as fodder. And so eventually what the Shluchei Basin ended up doing is that they basically said, okay, you know what? You are growing kalim out in your field. Doesn't seem to bother you. So we are declaring your field to be ownerless. We're being mafkir your field. And now, minan shefker basin hefker. So here we go. With a classic discussion, the Bavli discusses this. We saw this back in Gittin around Lamed Vav, Lamed Zion. So here the Gemara in Shkalim, Daf Gimel, is also going to be treating us now to this idea that based in this has this kind of executive power where they could declare somebody's field ownerless. So Minayin Shefker based in Hefker. So how do I know this? Where does this come from? So here we have a pasuk in Sefer Ezra, where basically Ezra brings back the Jews to Eretz Yisrael after 7 years of being in exile from Churban Bayis Rishon until the building of Bayis Sheni. So we were in Galus Bavel for 70 years, and Ezra brings everybody back. A couple of things. Number one, not everybody came back. In fact, in the first wave of Shuvat Zion, of returning to Eretz Yisrael, so a small smattering of the Jewish people came back together with Ezra. 42,000 came back together with him, right? A really small number, it's really small representative. Also, the people that came back with him were not that observant. In fact, many of them were married to non-Jewish wives. And so what Ezra had to do is he basically tried to clean it up. Okay, now obviously it's to say the least, it's really difficult. Meaning those that came back with him now are coming back with their non-Jewish wives, and he's telling them that they have to divorce from their from their wives. So some listened, some didn't. Anyway, the Navi in Ezra says that he's demanding that every Jew has to assemble in Yerushalayim, and if they don't, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to declare your property to be ownerless. So that is the it's a beferish pasuk in Navi that says that Beis Din has this kind of power. So minayin shehi peturim min hamasar. So the Gemara over here says that look, now, once we know that you can declare somebody's field to be ownerless, so how do I know now that any produce that grows on the field is no longer going to be subject to trumas ma'isos? We know this is a general rule that when you have hefker, when you have something that's not owned by somebody, when you have property not owned by somebody, so produce in that field is in fact going to be pitur, it's going to be exempt from trumas ma'isos. So the Gemara says, basically, is that going to be true over here? Meaning that if Beis Din is the one who's disavowing you of your property, so is it so ownerless that it's going to be even be exempt from Trumas HaMaestros? And the Gemara's response is, Rabbi Yonah son Brei. And I'm sorry, and what really the Gemara wants to know is, and what's the source of that? Meaning, how do I know that that's so? So Rabbi Yonah son Brei de Rabbi Yitzchak bar Abba, Shama la min adab. We can learn it from the following. Ein ma'avernes Hashana lo b'shvias v'lo b'motzei shvias. One is not allowed to add an extra month, not during a Shemitah year, not during a post-Shemitah year. Beis Din has the obligation to go ahead and make sure that the solar calendar or lunar calendar align with one another. We just discussed this yesterday. And so therefore, it's incumbent upon Beis Din about every third year to extend the year by a full month. Right, we talked about this 11-day deficit that exists between a solar calendar and a lunar calendar. After 3 years, we're talking about a running deficit of 33 days. So approximately every third year, it's not precise. So Beis Din would go ahead and would add. Now, for the last 1700 years, approximately, so the calendar was fixed, so that basically this procedure is fixed into motion until Mashiach comes. Okay, and that's how we've been operating for 1700 years. Mathematically, by the way, it is unbelievably impressive that they were able to set a calendar in motion where we're going to be operating where the solar and lunar calendar are going to be aligned. And it's a 19-year cycle, and 7 of those 19 years are going to be an Ibra year. Anyway, the Mishnah is telling us over here, it's a Braisa. Anyway, we saw this Braisa back in Sanhedrin. I think I mentioned it just yesterday. The main discussions in the Bavli in terms of this idea of intercalation, that's the fancy term to describe it, is discussed in the first parak of Sanhedrin. So the Braisa says that we are not going to be Ma'abashana, not in the seventh year, meaning not in the Shemitah year, and not in the post-Shemitah year. V'im Ivrua, now if you did, meaning Lichatzchila with Beis Din should not do so, but for whatever reason, extenuating circumstances, whatever the case was, if they did, harizem uberes. So it is going to be a valid act. It's still going to be a legal act, even though it shouldn't have been done. But for whatever reason, if it's done, so it has legitimacy. Now, v'chodesh echad shu mosif lo patur mimasosu. So the Gemara now asks rhetorically. So if just for a moment, think about the Shemitah year. So in the Shemitah year, now that the Chachamim added, so now any growth that grows on the field is going to be subject to the Shemitah laws, which means that it's ownerless, which means that it's going to be patur from trumas ma'isos. So the Gemara now wants to use this point over here to show that when Beis Din is exercising their their executive power of Hefker based in Hefker. So it creates a patur from Trumas HaMaisos. Now, if you think about it for a moment, the source that the Gemara just provided over here is not exactly the same. And the Gemara, in just a little bit, is going to ask that very question. But before the Gemara asks that question, the Gemara is just going to clear up a couple of points over here. So right now, we're just kind of like, we're just providing a little bit of a clearinghouse of some of the points that we just said. But eventually, the Gemara is going to come back, and the Gemara is going to basically say, I don't particularly love that source. The Gemara says, and again, Girsas over here get a little bit tricky, but Nicha Shavias, Motze Shavias Mai. Okay, the Gemara says good. So I get you in terms of Basin shouldn't be adding another month in the Shemitah year, right? And the Gemara says, and I totally understand it. In fact, it's pretty intuitive. You don't want to prolong a Shemitah year. Shemitah year, you're not allowed to work the land, you're not allowed to work the field. So it can get difficult, and then you're going to add another month. So the Gemara says, I totally get it. It doesn't really need much of an explanation. But Motzei Shviyas, but the post Shemitah year, what's the problem? Meaning, why not make it an Ibriyar? So the Gemara says, I'm a Rebbe Abahu, or some version of Rebbe Abahu, Shlo L'Ribos Bezer Chadash. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you why. Because consider the following. In the Shemitah year itself, so there was no produce that was being planted. In the post Shemitah year, so what kind of surpluses are we looking about from previous years? So obviously, the surpluses are going to be very limited. And now what? We know that the grains that grew during the post Shemitah year, in other words, we planted grains, we grew grains during the post Shemitah year. So you're not allowed to eat them, meaning they're subject to the Isur of Chadash. And the only time that you're allowed to eat them is only after you bring the Karban Omer, which is the second day of Pesach. And so basically now, the Shemitah year, no produce was planted. In the post-Shemitah year, produce was planted, but that's also Mishim Chadash. And now what you're going to do, you're going to add another month of Adar. So the Gemara says that's exactly why you shouldn't do it even in the post-Shemitah year. Rebbe Ze'ira B'Shem Rebbe Lazar, the Gemara, this is just now going to be a follow-up point to what we just learned. Hadad Da'at Amar. So you said, Ashlo hita Rebbe lahavi yerek mechutz aretz laaretz, aval mishehita Rebbe lahavi yerek mechutz aretz laaretz. So who shviz, who shall shar shnei shavua? So Rebbe did give an allowance for importing, meaning prior to Rebbe, so one was not allowed to import any vegetation from outside of Eretz Yisrael into Eretz Yisrael. But Rebbe allowed importation, and once he did so now that you have the benefit of imported goods, so therefore, we really don't have to factor in this idea that you shouldn't be prolonging your Shemitah year, because even if we did prolong a Shemitah year, so we can always import produce from outside of Eretz Yisrael. The Tani Ein Ma'avrim Bo, okay, maybe the Gra takes it out. Anyway, Amar Rebbe Mana, Hadada Atamart, Rishona, that which you said, Rishona Shayu, Hashanim Kisiknam, when the years were basically in their correct state, meaning that basically what we could anticipate is that all the grains of the winter season are going to grow and ripen by Nisan. But nowadays, so basically we're not looking at a regular schedule. It's not clear from the Gemara why the schedule was not regular. Why it is that the grains didn't grow fully by Nisan? The Gemara does not make that point clear, but whatever. The Gemara is assuming that they entered a new era where grains are not growing by Nisan. So then now probably the correct gear say here is he Motzei Shviyas, he Shar Shnei Shavua. So again, so now this idea that we shouldn't be adding another month in the post Shemitah year, it's no longer applicable. Again, the only impetus in terms of not adding another month was because we don't want to prolong the Isser Chadash. But the Isser Chadash is only going to be corrected if the grains ripen by the second day of Pesach. But now that the grains are not ripening by the second day of Pesach, so even in the post Shemitah year, you still don't, you're still not going to benefit from the, from not adding an additional month. So therefore, the Gemara says basically you can add another month even in the post Shemitah year nowadays as well. The Gemara now is just simply supporting exactly this idea. Shall base Rabbi Gamliel, Ibrua b'motzei shviyas miyad. So the Beis Din of Rabbi Gamliel, right? And we're talking now, we're looking at a post-Chorban period. So they were still intercalating. They were intercalating till about the 3rd century. And then after, around the 3rd century, 4th century is when they fixed the calendar. So anyway, so the Rabbi Gamliel's Beis Din, so they were Ma'abir, on a post-Shemitah year. Okay, so the Gemara points out that, even though we learned in a Brice that you shouldn't do it, but we see Rabbi Gamliel did it. So again, it's supportive of this idea that nowadays we're not regulated in not intercalating both a Shemitah year and a post-Shemitah year. Okay. With all that stated, we're now going to go fully back. Hefker, Beis Din, Hefker. So the Gemara says, how do I know about Hefker, Beis Din, Hefker? So we had a pasuk in Ezra. Then the Gemara said, okay, good. So once Beis Din now declares the field to be ownerless, so all the growth in that field is going to be exempt from Trumas and Maestros. So the Gemara says, and what's the source of that? So the Gemara says, look, the halacha that we just learned together. We learned the halacha together that during the Shemitah year, so Beis Din can go ahead and make that Shemitah year in an Ibra year. Now they shouldn't do it, but if they did, it's valid. And now for that extra month, aren't they creating a pitur from Trumos HaMaisos? So the Gemara says, I don't think that's a good proof. Meaning you're right, but it's not a good proof. So Amar Rabbi Avon in Min Hada. If you're saying it from just that alone, Leit Hashma Minaklum. You're not teaching, we can't learn anything from that. Why? Because Shmorz Chodesh Aviv, Shamayesh Aviv Bechidusho. Because the Gemara says, look, that, the idea that Beis Din is that adding another month, so that's a Torah bound halacha, meaning the Torah over there is instructing Beis Din that you have to make sure that the solar year and the lunar year align with one another. So yes, it's true that Beis Din is adding another month during the Shemitah year, and that Shemitah year now is going to be an ownerless the produce is going to be ownerless, and therefore it's going to be exempt from Trumas and Maisos. But that's not Beis Din executing their hefker based in hefker power. That's them fulfilling the mitzvah d'oraisa of making sure that the seasons align with one another. And the fact that now there's going to be another month of ownless produce, that's collateral damage, if you will. But the real impotence, the real allowance over there is to make sure that the seasons align with one another. Solar and lunar calendar aligned with one another. So that doesn't really show us over here about about Hefker Beis Din Hefker, and all the produce in the field is going to be ownerless. So the Gemara says, V'hada Amar Da. So the Gemara says, okay, so we need another source. Where do we have a source that Beis Din can directly declare produce to be ownerless to the point that it's going to be exempt from Trumas HaMaisos? So to which the Gemara says, I'll show you where. It's going to be a Mishnah. Mishnah Peya, 5th Perek Peya. Kiddush Shelo Luka Tachtav. So let's say there was leket out in the field, and the leket's supposed to go to the Aniyim. Right, you have one or two ears of grain that fell out from the. It either came off the sickle or the farmer picked it up with his hand and it fell. So, and it's just one or two grains. So that is now has the status of leket, and that has to be left for the poor people. The poor people are going to go ahead and entitled to gather it. Okay, it's part of the matnos aniyim. And what happened over here is what the farmer did is that he put an entire pile of grain on top of the leket. And so the Chachamim were very unhappy with that behavior. Basically, what you're doing is that you're preventing the Aniyim from going ahead and collecting the leket. So what the Chachamim did under those circumstances is they said the following. This is the Mishnah Peah. Kol anogos baretz harei hein shel Aniyim. Any grain touching the ground belongs to the Aniyim. V'ama Rabbi Ami. Now on this Mishnah Peah, the following comment, as we now turn to the Amud Beis, Kish B'shem Rabbi Shimon Ben Lakish, in the name of Reish Lakish, and that is the Beit Shammai. This mission that we just learned in Peah belongs to the position of Beit Shammai. The Ika Beis Hillel, because according to the Shitas Beis Hillel, so Aniyim Ochlin Me'asrin. This is not Hefker. Hefker means ownerless, which means that that nobody that nobody can claim ownership to it, and it would be accessible and eligible to anybody. That's hefker, and only that kind of hefker is going to be pturah from trumas and maisros. The Mishnah and Peah is saying that it's hefker la'aniyim being pturah from trumas and maisros. That's a Beis Shammai viewpoint, not a Beis Hillel viewpoint. So that is how Reish Lakish understands the Mishnah and Peah. The Amar Lei Rabbi Yossi, but Rabbi Yossi says to Rabbi Ami, no. The idea that it's going to be exempt from Meiser, that's not just limited to the Shita Beis Shammai. Don't tell me that the Mishnah Peah is only going like Beis Shammai, but rather it's going according to everybody. Why? Mishum Kenas, because over here we're looking at a Kenas. Meaning that this farmer, this field owner, put his grain on top of the Lekka grain. The Chachamim were so upset with this action. So as a punitive measure, so what they did is that they declare the grain to, underneath to be ownerless. Now, on top of that, they also redirected the grain to go to the Aniyim. Almost like two steps over here in terms of the Kenas. And the reason why we have to say that is because we would like the mission to be going like the Shita of Beis Hillel. Beis Hillel says that there's the only time that we're looking at an exemption from Trumas and Maisros is if it's fully ownerless. And so what the Chachamim did is that the Chachamim made the grains touching the ground fully ownerless, then went ahead and redirected it over to the Aniyim. Anyway, but now we have a source. This Mishnah and Peah, coupled together with the explanation that we just gave, that's going to be a source that teaches us that Hefker based in Hefker is going to declare the land to be so ownerless that it's going to be exempt from Trumas and Maisros. Okay. We are up to the third Mishnah here in the first parak of Shkalim. As I mentioned, things go quickly over here in Yerushalmi. There is not the kind of extensive discussions that we have like in the Bavli. We begin. So on the 15th day of Adar, we're back to now marking off significant dates in Adar from a financial standpoint. So on the 15th day of Adar, so the money changers would go ahead and set up Bimedina. Now Medina over here can mean one of two things. It could either mean outside Yerushalayim, or it could mean Yerushalayim as opposed to the Beis HaMikdash, as opposed to Har HaBayis. Okay, so it's some exterior perimeter. So that's where the money changers would be on the 15th. Now, on the 25th day of Adar, so they went to the Mikdash, meaning that they went interior. So if Medina meant anywhere outside Yerushalayim, so Mikdash could mean Yerushalayim. If Medina meant that they were in Yerushalayim, so Mikdash over here means that they went further interior, probably Har HaBayis. Mishi Yashvu B'Mikdash Yitzchulu L'Mashkein. Now, on the 25th of the day of Adar, so as the money changers now are moving into an interior position, so it's at that point in time that anyone who was not given a machitz is a shekel, already the announcement was made 25 days earlier, so already now you are close to 4 weeks having given the opportunity to give machitz is a shekel, and you have not done so, so what basically now comes is that they're mamashkein, they take collateral from you in order so that you'll pay your machitz is a shekel. So it's me mamashkenin, and who is collateral being taken from? So Levim, the Israelim, the Gerim, the Avadim, the Shechrarim. So anyone who's a Levi Israel, a Ger, we're talking about a full-fledged Ger, and a freed slave, basically somebody who has the status of a Jew. Avalonashim, Avadim, Ketanim, but not women, not slaves, not Ketanim. So you're not going to be Memashkin, you're not going to take collateral from them. The Gemara is going to be Medayik. You're not taking collateral from them, but it sounds like if they want to give, they can give. The Gemara is going to make that point very clear. Now, let's say that you have a child whose father already started giving on his behalf. Once the father starts giving on behalf of the child, so that's it. In other words, it's set in motion that annually now the father is going to be giving on behalf of this child until the child grows up. So you don't take a mashkin from kohanim. So the Mishnah's language over here is because of Darchei Shalom. In just a moment, we're going to clear up, we're going to explain better what exactly that means. Kohanim are giving the machitzis a shekel, yes or no? Major controversy. Here we are in the Mishnah. And today's daf, going over this machlokas as to whether or not the Kohanim are going to be, are required to give a machitzis a shekel. Am Rav Yehuda ein ben Bukhra b'Yavne. So Rav Yehuda quotes now, ben Bukhra in Yavne. Call a coin, sheshokel and a chote. Look, a coin, if he wants to give machitz to a shekel, that's fine. He doesn't have to. But if he wants to, he's not considered a sinner, meaning it's fine. But he doesn't have to. So Amar Rav Yochanan Zakkai lo ki. So Rav Yochanan Zakkai says, you have it wrong. And it's not, in fact, the case. I'll say it like this. If a Kohen does not give machatzis a shekel, he is a sinner. Meaning Kohanim have to give machatzis a shekel. El Shekohanim, Dorashim Mikras El Atzman, but the Kohanim feel justified in not giving the machatzis a shekel. So what they're going to do is they're going to rationalize they're not giving machatzis a shekel, but they're really obligated. How do I know that? The Pasuk says, so V'chol Minchas Kohen Kalol Tiyel Lo Se'achel. The Pasuk tells us, this week's parsha. The pasuk says that if a kohen is giving a mincha, so the halacha is it's a very straightforward halacha that any mincha belonging to a kohen. So kalil tiyeh, it's totally burnt on the mizbeach, meaning you do take off a kometz, but the kometz and the shiram are put onto the mizbeach and burnt on the mizbeach. Okay, and so the kohanim think to themselves as follows: Hova omer v'shei lechem lechem apanim shalanu. Okay, so the Kohanim, now this is all rationalization, justification. It's not a valid argument, but here's the argument. The Kohanim are saying, look, if we were to offer private mincha, so the halach is to be burnt on the mizbech, which means that there's an isser for anyone to consume it. Meanwhile, there are public menachos that are offered. The shtei lechem weekly, the lechem apanim weekly, the shtei lechem on shavuos, the omer that's brought on the second day of Pesach. So these are menachos. Now, if we were to contribute money to the public karbanos, so that means that Kohen money now is paying for these menachos. You know that if a Kohen is offering a mincha, it is not allowed to be eaten. So how can we now contribute and our money is now going to be used for this public, for the public menachos, which are going to be eaten and violating the Torah because the mincha of a Kohen should not be eaten. So that's their argument. The Gemara is going to point out it is not a valid argument. Rav Yochanan Zakkai feels that it's just justification, it's just rationalization, but it does not present itself to be an authentic argument. Ein memashkin es hakatanim. We're going to come back to all these points in the Mishnah. Let's begin. So number one, so you don't take a collateral from a child. Halitvo tovim. The Gemara says, but that the implication over there is that they're giving the machatzis a shekel. It's just that we're not memashkin. Hadad tamar b'shevi shtei saaros, aval lo hevi shtei saaros lo bedam or lo bera ulamashkin e memashkin. And then the question of girs over here, but let's just say achihebo esrim. And basically, what comes out over here is as follows: we're going to basically, as far as an obligation to bring machatzis a shekel. So we're gonna break up a child's life into three stages. Stage number one, anytime before bar mitzvah, no obligation whatsoever for a child to bring machatzis a shekel. That's stage number one. Stage number two, from bar mitzvah until 20 years of age, from bar mitzvah to 20 years of age, that is what the Gemara says, that the hevi shtei saaros, we assume that puberty comes together with bar mitzvah, and so from 13 years of age, until 20 years of age, so the child is going to be expected, it's no longer a child, he's an adult. He's going to be expected to bring the machatzis a shekel, but you don't take collateral from 13 until 20. And then at 20 years of age, so now you're taking collateral in the event that they are not, they're not making a contribution. That is, the Gemara is navigating through all the different stages. So, kine masnisa. We learned the same thing in the following braisa. In memashkin es hakohanim mimnei derech hakavod. That was the end of the discussion regarding the child. The Gemara now is moving on. The points over here are coming so quickly. I just realized that we're on to a new topic. Anyway, kine masnisa, we learned the same thing in the braisa that we learned in our Mishnah, and that is in memashkin es hakohanim mimnei derech hakavod. So the Bryce over here says a little bit differently than our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says that you don't take collateral from a Kohen because of Darchi Shalom. The Bryce over here says not Darchi Shalom, but rather Derech HaKavod. It's just simply it's not respectful to go ahead and to start taking a Mashkon from a Kohen. There's a certain element of Kavod that we need to have towards Kohanim, and it's just simply not B'Kavod. Okay, I'm Rav Yehuda Hayin. Amar Rebbe Berechia. Time of the Rav Yochanan Zakkai. So Zayinu, 12 Shvatim, Yidnu. So in terms of a defense of Rav Yochanan Zakkai, meaning the Gemara in just a moment is going to be talking about the drasha that Rav Yochanan Zakkai feels is not really a drasha. But before that, so the Gemara now is just simply going over what would be a source that tells us that the Kohanim do in fact have to give machitzas a shekel. So it's a gematria, right? And we don't have that many in terms of bringing us to halacha, right? The most classic one is by Nazir. A Nazir, Stam Nazir, is for 30 days. So based on a gematria of the word yiyya. But aside from that, we don't see it that often. So here in the Yerushalmi, so Rabbi Brechi tells us that Zayinu, the gematria says 12. All 12 tribes need to give machitzas a shekel. Rabbi Tavi B'Shem Rabbanuna came Meshivin Chachamim to Rabbi Yehuda. And this is what the Chachamim say to Rabbi Yehuda, meaning anyone who agrees with Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai and that the Kohanim are obligated to give machitzas a shekel. So here's what they're going to say to Rabbi Yehuda who feels that there actually is a legitimate exemption for Kohanim to give machitzas a shekel. And the Chachamim say to Rabbi Yehuda, Chatis Yachid Mesa in Chatis Sibra Mesa. So first of all, a carbon chatas, right? There are 5 chataos that are to be discarded. So one of them is a chatas there are 5 in total. But an individual chatas is mesa, but chatas sibor is not mesa. But if you have a chatas of a carbon sibor, a communal carbon chatas, there's a number of examples of them. So it's not going to be discarded. It's not subject to the halach l'moshe misinai of chatas amesas. And minchas a yachid crave a kalil, and minchas tzibur crave a kalil. And once you understand that there's a difference between private carbon versus public carbon, so the same thing is true over here. Meaning the Kohanim are saying, oh, if we make a contribution to the public minachos, so then we're eating it, we're not allowed to eat it. So the answer is very simple. Don't compare a private carbon to a public carbon. Okay, so the Gemara over here now notes that although this argument is an excellent argument, it's not going to really speak to Rabbi Yehuda Vikasha, Mishivan Adam Davishena Modebo. Now, although the argument seems to be a really good argument, but you're arguing to Rabbi Yehuda. Now, it happens to be that Rabbi Yehuda Shita, the Gemara over here, quotes the Gemara in Yuma, Dinan, Ein Chata Sibra Mesa, and Rabbi Yehuda Amar Tamas. Rabbi Yehuda happens to be of the position that a communal carbon chatas, that for whatever reason is no longer needed, so it's holech lamisa, it's going to be discarded. So so it happens to be that Rabbi Yehuda doesn't agree with the starting point of the argument. Okay, so Gemara says fine. V'humosivla, now that we know what the Chachamim are arguing to Rabbi Yehuda, which is the basic difference between private versus public, so what's Rabbi Yehuda's response going to be? Zu lo nidvas yachri, v'ina masfinale. Zulo nidvas yachri. When a Kohen gives, if the Kohen were to give his machitzas a shekel, so that's not a nedava, meaning that it is not recorded as public money. The inna masvin alei, and they respond back to Rabbi Yehuda, what are you talking about? Kevish and Nimsul of Sibor? Of course it's public money. Meaning once they're contributing the machitzas a shekel, so that by its very definition is public money. Kemishu nidva Sibor. So, a little bit tricky to understand the back and forth over here. Meaning basically we're at the point of the debate where Rabbi Yehuda says it's not public money, and the Chachamim say no, it is public money. A little bit tricky to fully appreciate and understand what's at the core of the debate over here. Ksiv. The Gemara continues. Kol over el abgudim, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Nechemia. So the Torah in the Gemara over here is quoting a pasuk from Yechezkel, right? I was right the first time. Sorry. Okay, the Torah is quoting from Parshas Kisisa. So kol over el abgudim, who's giving the machitzas a shekel? So anyone who's going to be counted. So Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Nechemia, Chanamar called the avar. Now the word over means passed over. So called Avar B'Yama Yitain, anyone who goes through Kriyas Yamsuf, so he has to give. And Vecharana Amar, and the other one says, right, Charana is a Yerushalmi term. V'charana Amar, and the other one says, Chol da'avra al pikudayu yitain. Anyone who's going to go through the census is going to give. So the Gemara says, good. So these two opinions, what does it reflect? The machlokas that we've been learning now for the last 10 minutes. Mandam called Avra Biyama Yitain. So Misayel Rav Yochanan Zakkai. So if you went through Kriyas Yamsuf, obviously the Kohanim Levim went through Kriyas Yamsuf, they got to give. So that is that's a nod to the Shita Rav Yochanan Zakkai. And called Avra and Mandam called Avra Pikadai Yitain. And if you're counted through the census that you're going to give, so Misayel Ben Bukhri. So that is a support for the position of Ben Bukhri, who Rav Yehuda quoted that the Kohanim are in fact going to be exempt. Let's begin the Mishnah over here. Right, these dapim are long, and I really do not want to fall behind. Let's start. Alpha pisha amru ein mamashkin nashim avadim v'ketanim aval imshaklu mekabla miyadam. The previous Mishnah taught us that you don't take collateral from women, from slaves, from ketanim, but if they want to contribute, so we accept the money, meaning that there's a legitimacy in their contribution. Contrast that to a Nachri and a Kusi. A Nachri and a Kusi, Kusim, which we're going to be discussing in more detail tomorrow. We've gone over Kusim time and again throughout Chas. So and I'm not going to go over it right now. So anyway, but when you have a Nanjo, when you have a Kusi, and they make a contribution, so Ein Mekabla Mehem, we do not accept. Ein Mekabla Yadam, and we do not accept from them. Now the them over here presumably is talking about the Kusi, because we're talking about very specific karbanos, and by a non-Jew, it's not even shaykh. So presumably over here, the Mishnah is talking about the Kusi. And here's what we're not going to accept from them. We're not going to accept from them kinezavos, v'kine yolados. The karbanos which we describe as mechusrei kapara, at the end of a period of either zav or zava, or a woman after having given birth, so their karbanos that they bring, which conclude their tahara process. So it's not good. We're not going to accept it from kusim and v'chatos v'ashamos and a carbon chatos, carbon asham, zeaklal. And basically the rule is kol shenida v'nida of anything which is voluntary, mekabim miyadam, we can accept from them. And kol she'enu nida v'nida, but anything that is not voluntary, but rather obligatory, ein mekabim miyadam, we're not going to accept it from the kusim. V'chem mefurash al yedei Ezra, shenemar, and the pasuk in Ezra speaks to this idea as well. Lo lachem v'lanu levnos beis alelkenu. All right, Ezra is building the base of Mikdash. Second time this morning that we're referencing Ezra and Binyan by Sheni, and Ezra says to the locals, a number of them being not Jewish, we really appreciate your offering to help us build the base of Mikdash, but no, we're gonna reject your financial donations, and we're gonna build the base of Mikdash on our own. Okay, I know it's a funny place to stop, but Ad Kan, we're gonna stop over here. Tomorrow we start. We're gonna pick it up right in the Mishnah. And tomorrow we start with the Kabbalah discussion. Okay, you'll see what I mean tomorrow. Anyway, let's quickly recap our daf today. We started off today on the top of Gimel Mad Aleph with the discussion of what are Tzarchei Rabbim, what are definitions of Tzarchei Rabbim. We quoted the Mishnayos in Moikatan, going over a list of what falls under the category of Tzarchei Rabbim, things you're allowed to do during Chol HaMoed. If you're allowed to do it during Chol HaMoed, so one of the exemptions of malachas that you're allowed to do is Tzarchei Rabbim. So we went through the Mishnah in terms of what are definitions of Tzarchei Rabbim. Okay, a small discrepancy in terms of activities that are done the 15th of Adar and then presumably repeated just 1 month later during Chol HaMoed Pesach. Okay, the Gemara cleared that up. And the Mishnah says that we're marking off graves. The 15th day of Adar is an excellent time to mark off graves. People are going to be walking, making aliyah l'regel. They don't want to come into contact with tumah, so graves are going to be marked off. The Gemara gave us on Gimel and Aleph two sources in terms of this halacha that we're going to be marking off graves. One is from the Mitzvah Tamei Tamei Yikra, and the other one was from a pasuk in Sefer Yecheskel in the 39th parak of Yecheskel when dealing with all the remains from the Milchemes Gog u'Magog. The Gemara talked about when you see one stone marked as opposed to two stones marked, do we assume that if one stone marked, we assume that the mace is directly underneath. When two stones are marked, we assume that they are surrounding an area of tumah, but the actual marking area itself is tahor. Okay, and the last thing we learned about marking off graves is that if it's just basar, if it's just human flesh, so that is not going to be marked because the decomposition is going to be really quick. And if we mark it, so then people are going to erroneously think that the area is an area of Tumah, and that only would be true for the first week or two, right? Not precise with my timeline, but for the first week or two before decomposition, so it's going to be Tameh, but after that point in time, it's no longer going to be Tameh, and the Chachamim basically took the long game as opposed to the short, the short-term game. The Mishnah talked about the Beis Din going ahead and checking for klaim and ripping out the klaim, originally putting it in the front lawn, then putting it out in the streets, and then if the person was really they come to realize that they really have to be punitive in measure, and so what they did is they declared the field to be ownerless, and the Gemara immediately launches into the discussion of, oh, that's hefker based in hefker, what's the source of hefker based in hefker, and so for that the Gemara quoted a pasuk in Ezra. A discussion that the Gemara had, and for Yerushalmi terminology, a pretty long discussion from Gimel Amud Aleph to Gimel Amud Beis, and that is that once Beis Din exercises Hefker, Beis Din Hefker, so then the idea that any produce that grows on that field is going to be potter from Trumas HaMaisos. So how do I know that? What's the source of that? Eventually, it came from a Mishnah in Peah, the first Mishnah, the fifth parak of Peah. Then On the Amud Beis in today's daf, we talked about the money changer setting up shop in the Medina on the 15th, and then going interior into the Mikdash on the 25th day of Adar. By the 25th day of Adar, people were not giving, so then the Shluchei Beis Din would start taking a mashkon, would start taking collateral. So who they would take collateral from? So basically anyone who's obligated. So we noted that a child between bar mitzvah and 20 years of age, so he's obligated to give, but the Beis Din would not take collateral from him. It's only from 20 and upwards is basically going to be taking collateral. The Mishnah presented the major debate between the Tanayim as to whether or not Kohanim are obligated in Machatzis HaShekel. So Rabbi Yehuda quotes, Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah quotes the Shita of Rabbi, of Ben Bukhri, that says that with that Kohanim are not obligated. Rav Yochem and Zakkai strongly opposed that position. He said that Kohanim are in fact obligated, and any drasha you hear about it, which you would hear, which we did hear this morning, is just rationalization. Now, as far as a defense of Rav Yochem and Zakkai, so the Gemara says it's very simple. Number one, we have a drasha of Zeg Yitnu. Zeg Begamashia is 12. All 12 tribes have to make contributions, including the Levim, including the Kohanim. On top of that, the argument that's given by the Kohanim is not a valid argument, because there's a very basic differentiation you can make between a private carbon versus a public carbon. Okay, and the back and forth on that issue. And finally, the last thing that we covered today on the Amud Beis is that women and avadim and ketanim. So you're not going to take a mashkin from them, but if they want to give, we're going to accept. As opposed to a nachri nekusi, where if they want to give the Machatzis HaShekel, we don't accept from them the Machatzis HaShekel. And then the Mishnah quoted from Sefer Ezra that we don't want contributions from the Goyim in terms of building the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, we'll stop over here. Tomorrow we start with Kabbalah.